I wonder if it's fair to say that conservative Christians, with their very keen sense of right and wrong, with their very keen sense of truth and dogma, so often they are perceived as judgmental towards others. They make statements, they make corrections, they call people out, and they're perceived to be judgmental. Of course, a little bit down the line, their own imperfections and their own sins get exposed, and then they're called hypocritical. And if we're honest with ourselves and with the world, we actually have to confess that there is much judgmentalism and much hypocrisy found in the church and flowing from the church. Which is a great relief when we find in the scriptures that Jesus speaks to that, that he speaks to those issues. And what he does in the passage we're looking at this morning is he shows us how righteousness, I mean, that's been the key theme through this, righteousness in Christ, how it should shape all of life, but particularly our relationships with one another. Remember, the Sermon on the Mount has all been about living rightly as God's people, living as kingdom citizens the way the king wants us to. And as we've seen over the last few chapters, that demands choices from us, actions from us, ambitions from us that are very different from the world. We've just seen recently, haven't we, that as Christians we serve God, not money, and we seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, not our own kingdoms and our own empires. And so we'll remember from the very start of the Sermon on the Mount back in chapter 5 that Jesus expects a high standard from all of his followers. Chapter 5 verse 20, he expects a righteousness that surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. A righteousness that impacts all of life. A righteousness that impacts how you relate to others. Whether those others are fellow Christians, believers, or whether those others are in the world as unbelievers. One writer helpfully says that the demands for perfection can breed judgmentalism, while demands for love can cause chronic shortage of discernment. Well, in our section today, Jesus addresses both. Come with me to verse 1. Don't judge. Don't judge. Of course, as we hear those words, don't judge, do not judge, Jesus can't mean that we don't make any judgments. Just think about the Sermon on the Mount. The very sermon that Jesus has been giving us demands moral distinctions, demands that we make judgments to live differently. It can't be no judgment at all, because in John chapter 7, Jesus himself says to us, you must judge correctly. So there he expects that we'll make judgments. And so what does he mean then? Well, I think what Jesus is demanding is that for his disciples, they are not meant to be judgmental. I came across this wonderful word, censorious. Doesn't that sound like a great word? Censorious. We are not to be judgmental and censorious. That is overcritical, overstern, condemning. Christian people shouldn't be adopting a judgmental attitude that is critical and condemning of others, especially of other believers. I'm sorry to break this to you this morning, but you're not God. And you're not perfect. And so who are you to sit in judgment or to pass judgment on anyone else? In fact, when you do that, what you're actually doing is you're usurping God's place. You're pretending to be God, and you're not. Now, what Jesus wants from his people is that we should be marked by mercy and by love. That we will treat others in their imperfections in the way that we want to be treated by them amidst our imperfections. In other words, that we will treat them the way God has actually already treated us. You're fallible and you're fallen. And it's that self-awareness that must shape how you treat others. See, when we have a right view of ourselves, suddenly humility will be involved in every relationship, all relationships. Of course, when Jesus says, do not judge, he's not just saying we shouldn't do it for no reason. He's quite clear why we shouldn't. In fact, he gives very good reasons. Have a look back at verse 1. He knows that our unloving treatment of others will actually incur God's judgment upon us. You see, we'll be judged for our presumption to be God. We'll be judged by the attitudes and actions that follow from a hard, critical heart. In verse 2, he reminds us that the measure we use to treat others will be the measure that is used by God to judge us. And so if our actions lack righteousness, if our actions are devoid of mercy and love, then we'll be judged as those who are unrighteous. And can I just say for a moment, that is a frightening measure. I just think about that, that we will be judged as those who are unrighteous, unmerciful, and unloving. Of course, Jesus says, look at again at verse 3 and verse 4, he says, our judgmentalism of others is so often hypocritical. See, we're not perfect, are we? How can we act as if we are? How can we, when we have glaring problems, he uses the term plank. It's pretty awkward to get a plank in your eye, isn't it? And so you can just see the hyperbole of this picture. Imagine you have got a plank in your own eye, Jesus says, and now you come and worry about a splinter in somebody else's. He says, that's just illogical. It's not illogical only, it's hypocritical. See, you've got glaring issues in your own hearts and in your own lives, and yet you set completely unreasonable expectations on others. Deal with your plank before you deal with their splinter. And Don Carson writes, the judgmental person, by not being forgiving and loving, testifies to his own arrogance and impenitence, by which he shuts himself out from God's forgiveness. So just let this wash over us for a moment. And let's just think about what the heart of the issue is here that Jesus is addressing. I hope by now you've worked it out that it's the issue of your heart. It's your heart. See, Jesus is saying to us, look, there can't be room for self-righteousness and arrogance and hypocrisy in our hearts or in our relationships. Now, we need to be marked by humility. We need to be marked by love. Remember when we started the Sermon on the Mount back in the Beatitudes? Blessed are the merciful. Merciful. And so as we sit here today, we need to heed the warning. We need to examine your hearts. I need to examine my heart. You see, and when we do, I think what Jesus is saying is that suddenly your relationships with others will be much better. See, if we don't come across self-righteously and arrogant, but loving and merciful and kind. I mean, as we sit here today, isn't that actually how you and I want to be treated by others? I mean, as you sit here today, isn't that what you actually want? Well, Jesus is saying, well, will you treat others the same way then? Will you do that? And so even as godly Christians, even as zealous Christians, even as conservative Christians, sometimes our zeal for what's right means we fail to act rightly. And sometimes we leave a wake of destruction and brokenness behind us. I think one of the things we have to work on, less judgmentalism and more grace. Now don't be fooled if you keep reading, and when Jesus says do not judge, don't be judgmental, that's not to say we are not to discern. No, we must discern. And so if the first point this morning was don't judge, can I tell you the second point is do judge. Do judge. Well, we must. Jesus is not suggesting for a moment that you and I suspend our critical faculties in relation to others. He's not suggesting we turn a blind eye to sin. Now, we're not to avoid criticism or correction. We're not to fail to discern between truth and error, goodness and evil, as if it's all the same thing. Now, we're not to treat everybody identically. Oh yes, remove the plank from your eye. You must do that. But did you notice? It's not remove the plank from your eye and that's where it stops. Remove the plank from your eye, because then when you are humble, when you are gracious, when you are loving, then you can actually help your brother or sister to remove the splinter from their eye. You're not meant to leave the splinter there. You're meant to help them. You're meant to get it out of them. But do that graciously and kindly. Look at verse 6. Identify who the dogs are. That song, Who Let the Dogs Out? See, we've got to think, who are the dogs? Who are the pigs? Because Jesus says, look, you've got to treat them accordingly. If you think what Jesus has said already, he's exhorted us to love our enemies, chapter 5. He's just exhorted us not to judge. Of course, and as we heed these exhortations, we might fail to consider the subtleties of what Jesus is actually saying here. One writer says, he says, the danger is that if you miss the subtleties of the argument, you become undiscerning simpletons. That's what you want to hear from the pastor today, isn't it? And Jesus says, don't do that. The phrase don't judge doesn't mean become a simpleton. Oh sure, none of us are perfect. Every one of us as we sit here today is fallen and fallible. And so we don't sit in judgment. We are not judgmental. But we don't ignore the truth and reality of sin and brokenness. And so quite frankly, sometimes we do need to call out a brother or a sister. Maybe because of their conversation. Maybe because of their conduct. Remember, the scriptures are given to us to teach, to reprove, to correct, to train the child of God in godliness and righteousness. And we must do that. Oh, we must do that gently. We must do that kindly. Oh, we must do that with humility and love. But we must do that in the context of the community if we're going to grow in righteousness. And just so you know, as much as I'm saying we must do that to you, you must do that to me. That's what it means to be in relationship, doesn't it? That we want to spur each other on to love and good deeds. We want to help each other walk in righteousness. And sometimes that means not just encouragement, not just applause, but correction and teaching. And so true love doesn't deny or diminish the truth of sin. Now it demands we rather speak the truth in love. And friends, that's going to require discernment on our part. We have to discern. But I think that's what being in community is all about. We were on a conference recently, the staff, and the guy said to us, he said, from time to time, you have to have fierce conversations. What a great phrase. Fierce conversations where we lovingly want to help one another grow. I need people to have fierce conversations with me. Lovingly and gently and kindly, but I need them to speak the truth to me. And likewise, you need brothers and sisters who will model genuine love for you that helps you grow in righteousness, not excuse sin and unrighteousness. But of course, we don't only deal with Christians. Whoops. We don't only deal with Christians, do we? We sometimes deal with unbelievers. And sure, many of the unbelievers you and I know are nice, aren't they? They're nice. Generally, they're nice folk. But Jesus reminds us that not everybody in the world appreciates kingdom values. Not everybody in the world is going to act rightly. Not everybody in the world is going to be nice and treat you well. Some will be dogs. And some will be pigs. Of course, if you're an animal lover here this morning, I've just offended you. I'm sorry about that. Because here's what we think. We think about dogs, don't we? And we think about the sweet, lovely dogs that you have at home. If you want a sweet, lovely dog at your home, come and speak to me. I've got two available. You can have them after the service. But in the context, dogs are not sweet, domesticated animals. Certainly not in first century. Dogs are vicious marauders who prowl the streets scavenging, stealing. You were in great trouble if you came across a pack of dogs. And interestingly, as much as I love sweet and sour pork, Jesus says pigs can be dangerous. Pigs can be dangerous. You treat them badly, you do the wrong thing, not only will they trample your pearls, they will turn around and devour you. See, Jesus is drawing on two animals that serve together as a picture of what is vicious, what is unclean, and what is abominable in society. And just so you know, he's not talking about the animals, really, is he? He's actually describing people. He's using these animals to show the people that you and I might have to engage with. It's a picture of those who reject Jesus over and over again. It's a picture of those who want nothing to do with the gospel over and over again. It's people who continue to not just live in, but to relish their rebellion. And Jesus says, you need to discern who they are. So you don't give dogs what is sacred, and you don't give pigs your pearls. See, we've got to learn who they are. How we've got to stop throwing our pearls, which I take it in this context is the gospel. We've got to stop doing that. See, there are some people who've had so much opportunity to hear and to receive, but they have decisively and defiantly rejected Jesus. They want nothing to do with him. And for sure, while you and I are to be long-suffering in our love, and certainly we are to be persevering in our evangelism, Jesus says there does come a time where we must shake the dust off our feet and go elsewhere with the gospel. In other words, you and I have to discern, am I barking up the wrong tree? Is this fruitless and pointless? See, when it comes to kingdom values and gospel growth, we need to discern the situation, and we need to discern who we're dealing with. Please don't misunderstand me. We must go the extra mile. We must turn the other cheek. We must do all we can. But sometimes we just can't do any more. And sometimes Jesus says, stop throwing your pearls to them. Sometimes walk away. For the sake of your godliness, for the sake of your righteousness, don't lower yourself to their levels. Now walk away from it. Now, of course, the question you want to know, don't you, is when? How will I know? And so let me very helpfully, as your pastor, say, I don't know. I don't know. I wish I could say to you that Hezekiah chapter 5 verse 9 says to you, look, once you've done 6 weeks and 4 days, you can stop. Or once you've endured this much, you can change. But the passage doesn't tell me that. It just tells me that actually as I deal with the world, I need to discern, because sometimes I have to act decisively by walking away. Which I think is why the very next thing Jesus says is verse 7. See, righteousness demands we show love and mercy towards believers and courage and decisiveness to unbelievers. But that humility and discernment on our part requires much grace and much wisdom from our God, from our Heavenly Father. And so having challenged them to this right behavior towards others, Jesus says, but don't forget, for all of this you are completely dependent on your Father in heaven. You can't do this without His help. Now we must depend on the Father. That's why Jesus says, ask, seek, and knock. Ask, seek, and knock. It's a call to us to depend on God. It's a call to prayer. It's a call to recognize that you and I are dependent on God's grace, not just to become a Christian, but to continue as a Christian. Just so you know, we never get done with the grace of God. We never move on from the grace of God. We never get to a stage where we are independent. It's so countercultural. Because what's the great goal for us? We can't wait till our kids grow up and leave home and earn their own money. Isn't it? Oh, of course, I'd love my kids to stay there forever. Isn't there? I mean, our whole culture says to us, let's strive for independence. Now, in the Christian way, we never reach independence. We are always dependent on God. We're dependent on Him to make us a Christian, and we're dependent on Him to keep us Christian. We never move from grace. You see, I need God's help to live rightly. I need God's help to treat others rightly. And here's the promise of what Jesus says. He says, when we ask Him, when we seek these things, when we pursue His kingdom, we will receive, and we will find, and we will enter. It's a beautiful picture. I was so grateful for the way Andrew spoke earlier. Our God is a good God, Our Father is a good Father. He longs for you and I to live righteous lives. He wants you to do that for your good, and He wants you to do that for His glory. And can I just assure you, Jesus is not setting you up for failure. Because here's what He says. He says, this is what I want you to do. And when you work on that, when you're deliberate about that, when you're intentional about that, I will help you. I will walk the road with you. As you ask, I will give. As you seek, I will provide. As you knock, I will open the door so you can enter. That's what God says to us. Did you notice verse 11? If evil parents can get this right, because I know we don't want to think of ourselves like this, and I'm sure my sons will be taking notes at this point, but Jesus says, I'm an evil father. And I am. I'm a wicked, fallen sinner. I get it wrong all the time, and yet even I know as a parent, I want to give nice things to my kids. And Jesus says to us, He says, well, if you guys can get that right, how much more do you think your good Father in heaven will get this right? And He knows what we need, and He will give it to us. And so if we're going to live rightly in our relationships, Jesus says to us, well, then you must pray, ask, and ask with earnest sincerity. I take it that's the seeking. And as you do, pursue God's way, knock on His door. In other words, it's back to the Beatitudes. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. It's about recognizing that we go forward dependent on God. If we're going to live rightly, if we're going to live relationally, we need God's help. We need His help. And so verse 12, in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. Many call this the golden rule. Of course, it's more than wisdom for life. Okay, that's the golden rule. The golden rule is don't do harm. It's even more positive, I think, than just the call to love your neighbor as yourself. Because remember, that's the gospel way of saying it. Now, I think in the context, as Jesus wraps up this section, it is the call to be like Jesus. See, we don't just depend on the Father to live rightly. Living rightly is about being like Jesus, to be like the Son. See, did you notice verse 12? That when we treat others rightly, when we treat them in mercy and love, when we treat them with wisdom and discernment, Jesus says that sums up the law of and the prophets. It is to live the way the disciples are meant to live. Now, I'm going to do something that's very unfair. Do you remember last term? There was a last term. Do you remember Matthew chapter 5? There was a chapter 5. We're in chapter 7. We've come through chapter 5. Do you remember that in Matthew chapter 5, do you remember that Jesus said, when He started the whole sermon, He says, I am the fulfillment of the law and the prophets. See, everything that was expected from God's people is fulfilled in the person of Christ, the Son of God. And now He says to us, He says, I want you to act in a way that sums up the law and the prophets. And so when He calls us to act in that way, do you see what He's doing? He's calling us to act in the way He would act. See, if He's the fulfillment of the law and the prophets, and our actions must summarize the law and the prophets, it's the same thing. We are to treat those who are fallen and fallible with humility and love, gently restoring them. We are to treat those who are hostile and aggressive with discernment and decisiveness. We are to treat all people with truth and love. Why? Because that's what Jesus does. Jesus is not asking you to do anything He has not already done. See, if we want to live rightly, if we want to treat other people well, it's very simple. It's not rocket science. Ask this one question. How would Jesus treat them? You want to know the best way to treat your Christian brother or sister? You want to know the best way to treat your fussy neighbor? You want to know the best way to treat your obstructive colleague? Ask this question. How will Jesus treat them? What will He do? Now, don't you hate it when the preacher says it's not rocket science, it's so simple? And then he says something like that. You see, I understand the understanding is the easy part. I understand the application is much harder. But that's what we're called to do. We're called to treat everyone the way Jesus treats them. That is righteousness in action. And so the golden rule is to treat people the way Jesus treats them. Treat them with humility and kindness. Treat them with truth and love. Treat them with wisdom and discernment. And He will help you to do that. Let's pray.